Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today on Coronavirus Update. It's Wednesday, October 28th, and you're here on Gila Members Community Radio. I'm your co-host, Marcus Hansen. This week on Grant County Coronavirus Update, our co-producer, Andrea Warner, interviews Dr. Renee Dupre, professor of public health at New Mexico State University who specializes in risk communication. But as always, first, here is the news. The New Mexico Department of Health on Tuesday reported 590 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 in New Mexico and 4 additional deaths related to the disease. Hospitalizations for COVID-19 also increased to a new record, with 309 individuals hospitalized in New Mexico for the disease, 20 more than reported on Monday. The Department of Health has now reported 43,169 confirmed cases of COVID-19 with 980 deaths. Additionally, 21,063 COVID-19 cases are recovered, leaving 22,106 active cases in New Mexico. Here in Grant County, there have been 187 cases reported, with 68 recoveries and 119 active cases. For more information on the latest COVID-19 information, information online, you can visit cv.nmhealth.org. Now, look at the local testing schedule. The Grant County Public Health Office provides free testing every Tuesday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. and every Wednesday afternoon from 3 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. Appointments can be scheduled by registering on the following website, that's cvtestreg.nmhealth.org. Once registered, you'll receive a code. Please save this code and use it when making your appointment by calling 575-538-5318, extension 4. The Grant County Public Health Office is located at 2610 North Silver Street. That's across the street from the swimming pool. CVS Pharmacy drive-thru here in Silver is making cell swab tests available to individuals meeting CDC criteria, in addition to state and age guidelines. Patients must register in advance at cvs.com. And lastly, Hidalgo Medical Services here in Silver is doing testing on weekdays except for Tuesdays at their clinic at 1007 Pope Street here in Silver, and at their Lordsburg Clinic on weekdays except for Thursdays at 530 DeMoss Street. You can call 575-388-1511 for an appointment. The New Mexico Department of Health urges all New Mexicans to get their annual flu shot, particularly those in vulnerable groups. The New Mexico Department of Health Silver City Public Health Office, located at 2610 North Silver Street, will host 3 flu shot clinics. This Friday, October 30th from 9 a.m. to noon, and Tuesday, November 3rd from 1 to 3:30 p.m. The annual flu shot is available for no charge for children and uninsured adults while supplies last. Now, because of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, masks are required and should cover both your mouth and nose at all times. Additional information on the flu can be found online at togethernm.org/flu. Looking to the food pantry schedules, the food pantry at the Gospel Mission, located at 111 South Texas Street here in Silver, is open for drive-through only on Wednesdays from 8:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. Emergency dry food boxes are available once a month to individuals upon request, and there's also a daily soup kitchen. Breakfast takes place from 9 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday, and lunch occurs every day from noon to 1 p.m. Showers and clothes are also made available to those in need. You can call 575-388-5071 for more information. The St. Francis Newman Center Food Pantry, located at 914 West 13th Street here in Silver, is open every Monday at 4 p.m. Cash assistance for rent, utilities, bus passes, and prescription drugs is also provided. You can call 575-388-4933 for more information. The Commons Regular Food Pantry will be held today, Wednesday, October 28th, from 4 to 6 p.m., and again on the first Saturday in November, that's the 7th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. The Commons is located at 501 East 13th Street, which is next door to the Knights of Columbus building. For more information, please contact the Commons at 575-388-2988. The Silver City Farmers Market accepts EBT and Pandemic EBT cards and offers double up food bucks to double your SNAP benefits. Use your EBT card and get half off of all purchases, Saturdays 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the corner of Pope Street and College Avenue in the old LifeQuest parking lot. More information online, silvercityfarmersmarket.info. Double up food bucks are also available now at the Silver City Food Co-op for half off of all New Mexico grown produce purchases. Also, the Silver City Food Co-op is accepting applications at silvercityfoodcoop.coop, that's silvercityfoodcoop.coop, through the end of November for its monthly Roundup program recipients. Each month, the Silver City Food Co-op provides the option for customers to give the change from their transactions back to the community instead of back into their own pockets. The accumulation of this change over several years has benefited many local organizations. Since December of 2016, they have donated $57,530 to organizations around Grant County. If you are part of an organization that could use a financial boost whose mission is in alignment with the co-op's desire to support a healthy and vibrant community, please fill out the simple online application at silvercityfoodcoop.coop. The new pandemic EBT hotline has been established for parents who have questions about eligibility or would like the additional information about PEBT benefits, the New Mexico Human Services Department announced on Thursday. New Mexico households with children who receive free or reduced price meals will receive benefits of $5.86 per child per day for the dates their individual school was 100% virtual, up until the day their school instituted a hybrid model, or September 30th, whichever is earlier. For additional information or eligibility questions, please call the new PEBT hotline. That number is 1-833-415-0569 from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. More info is online at hsd.state.nm.us. PNM customers offering financial assistance with their electricity bills can apply through the new PNM COVID Customer Relief Program. Eligibility is based on household income, and they go as follows: $50 to $200 per eligible residential customer, $150 to $200 per eligible small business. The amount of financial assistance provided will vary depending on how much is past due. Qualified customers may pay at least 25% of the past due balance as well. You must apply no later than December 31st or until funds last by calling PNM. That number is 1-855-364-2950. And you can call them Monday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 6 p.m., or you can visit PNM.com. Assistance is available on a first-come, first-served basis, and a full list of eligibility and requirements is available online at PNM.com/help. Message from the New Mexico Crisis and Access Line. If life disruptions caused by coronavirus are taking an emotional toll on you or someone you love, you're not alone. Many more people are dealing with feelings of sadness and anxiety just now. The New Mexico Crisis and Access Line is available anytime, free and confidential. That number is 1-855-NM-CRISIS. That's 1-855-662-7474. The Talk Helpline provides immediate assistance, referrals, and someone to talk to. Professional counselors' staff are trained to help people manage stress reactions, anxiety, dealing with loss, and promoting positive coping activities, including those that help strengthen resilience. More information at nmcrisisline.com, or once again, you can call 1-855-662-7474. On Monday, November 2nd, the New Mexico Mortgage Finance Authority will begin accepting applications for new COVID-19 house cost assistance program. The program will provide qualifying New Mexicans with as much as $1,500 per month for up to 3 months to pay back rent or mortgage payments and other housing costs. The COVID-19 House Costing Assistance Program is available to New Mexican households earning 80% or less of the median income in their area, adjusted for family size. In order to qualify, applicants must prove that they have suffered a financial hardship that is directly related to COVID-19 health crisis and documentation of delinquency. The complete program details, including household income limits by county, can be found on the Mortgage Finance Authority website, that is housingnm.org, and you can call 505-308-4206 or 866-488-0498 for questions. If you're a Bayard resident that needs help with water or rent, the CARES Act funding is available to help Bayard residents with water and utility rent bills. You can call the Bayard City Hall at 575-537-3327 for more information and on application procedures. The State Bar of New Mexico will hold a consumer debt bankruptcy workshop on October 28th from 6 to 8 p.m. That's today. And that's via video conference and teleconference. The workshop will cover repossessions, foreclosures, collection issues, and bankruptcy, and includes a presentation by a volunteer attorney, an open question and answer period, and a free one-on-one consultation with an attorney, according to a news release. The free event is open to the public, and you can call 505-797-6000 for details, or 505-797-6094 to register. If you missed today's webinar, the next Consumer Debt Workshop will be held on December 9th at 6 p.m. More information online at nmbar.org. Small businesses that have been impacted by COVID-19 may be eligible for a State of New Mexico Small Business Continuity Grant. These grants cover expenses associated with rent, non-owner payroll, mortgage payments, insurance, utilities, and marketing. Also cover the costs associated with COVID-19 reconfiguring. For more information regarding these grants and other helps for your small business, please call the Silver City Grant County Chamber of Commerce. That number is 575-538-3785. There are limited grants available, so complete your application for consideration today. The grant county application, or the grant application rather, with requirements and full details is available on the Silver City Grant County Chamber of Commerce website. That's silvercity.org. If you're in need of child care, your local providers are here to help. The state of New Mexico, in partnership with child care providers, have developed some of the clearest, most detailed health and safety regulations in the country. As a result, child care providers have kept COVID cases low through hand washing, temperature taking, cleaning and sanitation, social distancing, mask wearing, and rapid response and testing if a positive case occurs. For more information, you can visit nmececd.org and click on the Am I Eligible button, or you can call this number, that's 1-800-691-9067. You can also email child.care@state.nm.us if you have questions or concerns about child care. The election is less than 1 week away, so make a plan for how you plan to exercise your right to vote. If you're not registered, it's not too late. This year, the Grant County Clerk's Office and the Bayard Community Center are offering voter registration until this Saturday, that's October 31st. Early voting is happening right now, so those wishing to vote early may do so in Silver City at the Grant County Clerk's Office, that is 1400 Highway 180 East, and that's taking place October 6th through the 30th, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. This is the last week, and also this Saturday, October 31st from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Or if you're in Bayard, you can go to the Bayard Community Center. That's 290 Hurley Avenue. That's Tuesday through Saturday. And that's October 20th through the 31st, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. For all Grant County voter information, you can visit the Grant County Clerk's office webpage at grantcountynm.gov. Next up on Grant County Coronavirus Update, our co-producer Andrea Warner interviews Dr. Renee Dupre, professor of public health at New Mexico University who specializes in risk communication.
Welcome, Dr. Dupre. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Andrea. I'm glad to be here.
The reason why we asked you here today is to help us understand some of the numbers, the coronavirus numbers that we're hearing about in the news and in the daily reports from the governor. Right now in Grant County, we have 187 total cases and 3 deaths since the beginning of the pandemic, with only 68 reported recovered cases. Our coronavirus numbers have doubled since September, and we have 119 active cases in Grant County right now. Can you help us to understand these numbers and what it means for our county and our local Southwest region?
Well, I can try. And I want to remind us that this is an unprecedented situation, one that none of us have ever lived through before. And so that's why we really need to keep being open to learning and changing as things evolve. So I want to say, first of all, that Grant County has really done an admirable job of controlling COVID-19 until just recently. Those numbers that you just quoted represent the thing that concerns me the most, which is the rate of increase in cases. We've seen about a 70% increase in case numbers in Grant County in the last month and 117% increase since September 4th. So what that tells us is we're heading the wrong direction. And we're still in the green as a county, but if you look only in the more populated areas of the county, especially Silver City, we can see that we're actually, quote unquote, in the red in terms of our rate of spread. So I think it's really important to recognize that we're not going the right way, and we need to think about how we can stop it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I've looked at those numbers and the changing colors on the DOH map, on the Department of Health map. I notice that there's a band of red that runs from El Paso through Las Cruces through Deming into Silver City. With these massive infection rates in our surrounding areas and the fact that coronavirus hospitalizations have risen more than 100% just in the last week, how does that affect us right here in Grant County?
So, well, it affects us because of several reasons. First of all, we rely on some of those other more fully equipped and staffed hospitals to care for people here, not only for COVID-19 and coronavirus infections, but for other health issues. And we're increasing rapidly. But when we think about it, in our Southwest region, 73 out of 127 available ICU beds are occupied. So that means that we're at almost 60% occupation. So if we suddenly spike in our cases, and these hospitals that serve this bigger area can't accept us, we know right now, as of Sunday, El Paso has put in place, their civic center is now a kind of secondary alternate hospital because they're so overwhelmed with cases. And they've imposed a curfew at 10 p.m. in El Paso. Now, we know El Paso, that's going to be a little difficult to enforce, but that is what they've had to do in order to control it. So what that means for us in Grant County is when we have that heart attack victim, when we have that motor vehicle crash, that's usually where we send those people so that they can get care. And that's not available to us because those resources are overwhelmed. So it's really important for us to remember that we are a rural county. We have limited resources to care for someone who has one of those acute injuries or acute needs. And as other hospitals around the state are filling up, it's going to be harder and harder for Grant County residents to get the care they need if they get sick with COVID-19 or anything else. We also need to think about our primary care resources, like other rural areas. We're chronically understaffed, and most of our healthcare providers tend to be older. So they too are at risk. I cannot emphasize enough, I think we're up to 1,500 or close to 1,500 healthcare provider deaths in our country. That is just unconscionable. And we do not want a single one of those to be in our community. We need to protect our healthcare workers. So that's what I'm going to say. And that's how it affects us. In addition to just the simple fact that many of us travel back and forth between those places, whether it's to go to Trader Joe's to go pick up your bars of chocolate or whether it's for work. And any reason for travel between a hotspot and a non-hotspot is going to spread the virus.
Yeah, it's really scary. We're seeing the cases spread so quickly now. And like you said at the beginning of the interview, we were doing really well at the beginning of the pandemic in our local area. Can you share with us any insights you have on what happened since then that cases are spreading so quickly?
Well, I think it's a host of things. We have tried some reopenings. One of the things our governor did really early was she saw it coming, said, we don't have a lot of healthcare resources compared to other states. I'm shutting things down. And that really made a difference for us. But that sort of blanket shutdown, while we didn't have much, made people really, really anxious. There were economic harms with it. There were other harms where people lost jobs, businesses have closed, but there are a whole host of other harms that come with that very, very necessary public health intervention. It's just like if you go take a pill, there are going to be side effects. So it's not a surprise to anybody that we've seen those things. But nobody ever thought that we would be needing to do this for as long as we have. And so we've seen some reopening of the elementary schools. We've seen some reopening of restaurants and other places. And plus, I think a lot of people are just suffering from pandemic fatigue, and they're not really paying attention to a lot of the guidelines. There's conflicting messaging and misinformation and disinformation that's coming from what would usually be very trusted sources. So that's generating a lot of confusion. But the virus is the virus. As one of my colleagues at health journalist Marilyn McKenna once said, never underestimate an opponent that has a 3.3 billion year head start on you. The virus is a wily opponent, and it's going to act as the virus does no matter what we do. Our behaviors can impact it. And that said, I want to talk a little bit about one of the things that we're seeing around spread of the virus, because it really does impact the way that we behave and how we might be able to actually get it back under control before it gets too bad here. One of the epiterms that's gotten a lot of attention over the last few months is something called R-naught. If you've read anything on COVID, you've probably seen the R with the little zero subscript behind it. Well, that's a way that that epidemiologists ask and say, so if on average, for everyone who gets sick, how many people does that infected person pass it to? And there's an average, right? Big average. So if you're infected by one person, right now it's at 1.19. So as you can tell, just, you know, very, very simple math, if that R-naught number is anything over one, it means we're getting more cases, right? So one person on average infected, spreading it to 1.2 cases with, you know, five cases, suddenly we're starting to build that exponentially. And remember, exponential basically means you just keep multiplying by two or by whatever the factor is. So that's why we're starting to see that rate go up. But there's another statistical number that epidemiologists pay attention to, and that can tell us a lot more about how we individually can shift our behaviors to slow the spread of the virus. And that one is the K factor. We can think about this as the what is it okay to do factor. That okay factor, or the K factor, it's a kind of fancy value, statistical value, but it lets us know how much of what statisticians call variation there is in the number of people who pass the infection to other. So another way of looking at that is the difference in how many people each person with the coronavirus infects. So if you have 5 people or 10 people who are infected, what we're finding is that 8 of those people actually don't pass it on to anyone. But 2 of those people pass it on to a lot of people. So then we get that average, which is back to the R-naught. Okay, so, and here's the counterintuitive thing. If the K is small and the virus is still spreading, it means that there are more people who are called super spreaders, right? There are more people who are going to and doing these kind of events that where we see a lot of spread. And what epidemiologists and infectious diseases experts have found out is that those super spreaders can infect a whole lot of people. And there are certain activities, and this is what we've learned, that end up being super spreading events. Those tend to be the activities where we are gathered together. There's a lot of loud talking. Remember, airborne virus. We're breathing back and forth. People are, you know, I'll leave the masks for later because they are a factor and they do help, but they're not the be-all and the end-all. But when we're indoors, so for instance, some of the things that we really enjoy doing as human beings, which is going to a party, eating in a restaurant, singing in the church choir, those are the kinds of things that we're seeing really associated with spread. That's why the governor's latest orders limit what is called a mass gathering to 5 people or less if you're not all in the same household. And so we just have to remember, most people aren't infecting anyone else once they get sick with this, but a few are spreading it widely. And we can impact that by understanding that we can change our behaviors by avoiding those big gatherings, the church choirs, the indoor dining, and unfortunately, the family picnics and the things that we tend to do at holidays.
Yeah, I hear you saying that it's really each person's individual choices are really going to affect the whole of our community. And it's the choices that we each get to make or have to make, because some of them are hard choices. It's hard to decide not to go to the party, not to gather with your friends. And we just have to make those hard choices right now to keep our whole community, to keep those essential medical workers, and to keep the elderly safe. And, you know, we have Halloween and Thanksgiving. Just Halloween's on Saturday and Thanksgiving's just right around the corner. Can you talk to us about some ways we might think differently about those upcoming you know, special days so that we can help slow the spread, crush the spread of the coronavirus that's gaining on us so quickly right now?
So absolutely, we need to work together, and individual behaviors are huge. We also need communal behaviors. And I'm just going to, you know, pull that back, that we've got personal responsibilities each one of us has, which is going into the grocery store, wearing your mask, pulling it up over your nose. Don't do the thing, well, they made me wear it, so now I'm going to pull it down around my chin, right? No, that's not being an individually responsible member of our community. So individual behaviors are really important. We also need collective and communal behaviors. So those two things come together. And some of those things are things that you and I as an individual can't control. I'm not developing a vaccine right now. I don't think you are. I'm not working on the newest, greatest test so that we can really test people and get results in 2 seconds. Those aren't the things I'm working on, but I'm working on my everyday behaviors that my household is working with. So I just want to, you know, emphasize that we've got a continuum of behaviors. Some of those are personal, and some of those are communal and community oriented, and some of them can only be done by our government. So it takes all of us. It's a whole of community response. That said, specifically in terms of holidays, Halloween's coming up on Saturday, as you said, and it could be a super spreader day if we don't approach it the right way. And what I'm encouraging people to think about is not that we're skipping these holidays this year, but we're doing them differently. So perhaps instead of our traditional trick-or-treating, where everybody puts their same hands into the candy bag and then the kids all share the candy, we can find safer things to do. Lowest risk activities are activities with household members, and those you're around all the time, so you're not mixing. Right? Carve a pumpkin, do a treasure hunt, bake cupcakes, everybody dress up. You can find innovative ways to celebrate it alone. If you feel like you can take on a little bit more risk, a medium sort of approach to it would be, okay, we'll go trick-or-treating, but instead of having the one candy basket, we're going to walk masked 6 feet apart. And we're going to only, and if you're going to put out candy for anybody, please put it out in separate bags. Wash your hands before and after handling anything that you're going to be giving out to kids. Put it out at a table so people and kids don't congregate. We want to keep that 6 feet outdoors kind of things. Outdoors activity without a lot of talking, without sharing anything, especially food-wise, are the safest. Highest risk? Please don't do it. The Halloween parties, the haunted houses, the hay rides, anything where people are crammed together and breathing the same air. So that's like our general rule. So let's think about it. What I encourage people to think about this Thanksgiving, instead of gathering around the table, do a family hike. Find ways that we can still celebrate the real meaning of these holidays. This may be a huge opportunity for us. To move away from some of the commercialization of the holidays and the other things that many people complain about. And can we possibly think about reclaiming those holidays for our families and for our loved ones and make it a positive experience and a safe one as well?
Oh, those are great. Those are great points, Renee. Thanks for sharing those. I know this year we're going to be making caramel from scratch and making some caramel apples, and that's going to be our big Halloween excitement. And Thanksgiving, I think that we're going to be Zoom meeting with some family. I saw a really nice quote the other day on the internet that said, "Let's isolate now so that when we can come back together, we're all accounted for." And that's what I'm going to be grateful for this year at my Thanksgiving, is that we can come back together with family after.
Absolutely. And ironically, the biggest act of love that you can give to your family members this year is to interact at a distance. Let's think about some of the things that we haven't done forever. How about picking up a pen and writing a real letter? How about, you know, sharing those actual physical photos instead of the digital ones? Let's think about some things that perhaps we haven't done for a long time, making a phone call instead of sending a text. So these are things, let's use it as an opportunity so that when we can come back together physically, we can do so safely. hoping that by the holidays, we've slowed the spread. We've got faster, better testing. We can use more of the tools that we have, but it is going to take a concerted effort, not only from individuals, but from our local, state, and federal governments to work concisely together on the same page to develop the tools that we as Americans need to get back to work, to get back to our families, and to get back to safe, enjoyable life as the people we are.
Not to lose any more of our loved ones.
This is the largest tragedy any of us have ever lived through. And every single person who has been lost to this is a tragedy. And I include in those not only people who have died of COVID-19, but who have died because of COVID-19, because they lost a job and committed suicide, because they couldn't get the care they needed when they had the heart attack or gotten the motor vehicle crash. And those are really, really critical. When we add those up, we're probably somewhere between 300,000 and 350,000 excess deaths for us this year. So that's a really, really sobering number. So let's do what we can. Remember the old prayer of Reinhold of Serenity to give us the wisdom to know the difference. That's what we need to do. And there are many things we can do to keep each other safe and to really show our love for our family members and our fellow human beings.
Once again, that was Andrea Warner speaking with Dr. Renee Dupre, professor of public health at New Mexico State University. Thank you for joining us on Coronavirus Update here on Gila Membres Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, and streaming online at gmcr.org. You can visit our website, gmcr.org, for today's updates and links to resources as well as replays of today's and past shows. You can also visit our website at grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org, a clearinghouse of local, state, and federal information and resources to help keep you, your family, and our community safe in these times. While you're there, you can also join our mailing list to receive these updates via email, and don't forget to send us your updates to info@grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org or on Facebook at Grant County Coronavirus Update. Thanks once again for tuning in. Stay safe, be well, have a beautiful day, and we'll see you tomorrow.